discussion to do on food pyramids and how we represent food, healthy food eating, healthy eating, and then a couple of things with pollen. We're finishing up pollen today. And I kind of like the statement Zepeda makes. I think she makes a general statement about U.S. food culture that kind of balances some issues that we haven't seen before. So I think we'll get all that into the record. We've got some new books to share and some things like that. So let's call some names. Alex. Hi.
Hey.
Ashley. Great. Sydney. Great. Is everybody happy because of the sun today? Is everybody, you guys are in a pretty good mood here. Alyssa.
Good.
It's wonderful. Alex, go out and make some vitamin D. Annalise, great. Laura Fitzgerald, hi. Venezia, hi. Justin, great. Tori, Kiani, great. Rebecca, good. Beth, Lewis, yeah, hi. Brendan's back there, and Lewis McCoy, hi. And Laura's over there, almost there. Elliot. Colleen, great. Daniel, hi. Kennedy, right. Connor, good. JJ, right. And Peter, good. Cole, right. Kimberly, great. John, great. Chubby, good. Alex, right. And Cassie, wonderful. Okay. We'll start with a little food news, and I'll tell you about my books. Anybody have any food news? Yes.
I have a weird one.
Good.
So, apparently today, Burger King in some locations is giving out, like, sex toys along with their meal. So,
wow, that is weird.
Some people got, like, bits, some people got, like, handcuffs.
No.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
Really? Wow. I thought Carl Jr. had already kind of pushed the limit on
that. I don't think it's just Spokane.
Oh, it's not Spokane. What, they just didn't think we were, like, right for it or something? That's crazy.
Burger King is giving away sex toys. They had meals for
Valentine's. I was like, wow. That's pretty surprising. Okay, It is a food holiday, by the way, Valentine's Day, right? Associated with candy and things like that. That was great. Thanks for getting us started on in that direction. Just what we need for Valentine's Day. It helps our concentration tremendously. Other food news? Yeah, good. Good. That was really interesting. I had no idea. Okay.
Yes. I'm sure that everyone knows this already, but okay. They came out with, like, the Mac Junior, and what else was that? Like, the Grand Mac. Yeah, what the hell?
Grand Mac. Is that, like, so that's an enormous...
So, yeah, they made, like, I think a bigger version, a smaller version of the... And
how
they sell the Big Mac.
Oh, that's neat. Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. Mac Junior, Mac Junior, it's just a burger.
Oh, I see. What's the appeal of that?
It's not smaller than
a burger. Oh, I see. So you can have that and think you're eating something smaller. Right?
Yeah.
You know, if any of you are interested, there's a lot of literature on the future of the fast food industry and whether, you know, rebranding and health, you've all been to some healthy fast food restaurants. That's great to look into. Yeah, good. Others? Thanks for bringing that up. Yeah.
In the COG, they had a few... It was, like, from a couple weeks ago, posters up talking about water consumption and, like, how much a pound of meat takes. I just thought it was kind of interesting that
right.
did that. But it just kind of feels like a little two-faced, but, like, I
don't know. Because they want the cred from telling you how important environmentalism is.
As I, like, get a burger from downstairs.
Right. On your way to getting your Sodexo burger, you can find out about it.
I guess it's better than not having that information.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to come up in the Zepeda article a little bit. Like, whose responsibility is it? Like, in our system, and so that's a good thing to think about. Yeah, because I have the same reaction to Sodexo efforts. I have a bias against Sodexo, but it also seems like, you know, they're often trying to get the advantage, the luster of a good image in food, like having the greenhouse on top of the building, which, you know, produces how much, like a totally insignificant amount of food, right? On the other hand, it's better than nothing. People are then thinking, well, there's some real food in there. How about that? So, yeah, it's complicated. Good. Other thoughts on food? This is where food news can be, just things you thought about while you were experiencing food, while you were getting your shopping done. My new books to share with you today are, this is a classic book I bought for the library. We didn't have it. It's called Deep Vegetarianism. It's a 1999. It's not new. But if you want a one-volume, really thorough discussion of all the reasons why people have found vegetarianism interesting, this would be a good choice. I just started browsing it. And this is not a food book, but it's a really cool book I just finished. It's called The Hidden Life of Trees. And have any of you heard of this one? Just out. It's by a German forester. And it's kind of, well, you can browse it yourself. It's kind of about how trees cooperate with each other and how trees and funguses cooperate with each other. And it's kind of, I wasn't even going to bring it in because it's just kind of an interest. It's related to food because people make similar arguments about plant food systems, that they have a kind of some intelligent properties. I don't like the term plant sentience so much, but some writers talk about plant sentience as if plants are, well, they are aware, right? They have senses like touch and taste and smell. They have defenses. They have intelligent responses to their environment. And that's what that guy is kind of doing with trees. He's talking about how our understanding of trees is really wrong. We think of them as individuals and so on. So it enhances your sense of the complexity of plant life, let's just say it that way, which actually relates to this book, which is the new book. I'm so excited. I want to read this one right away. This is the David Montgomery. We're going to start reading David Montgomery on Thursday. And his previous book was called Dirt, which is a great title for a book. And we're going to read like four chapters from it as part of our unit on food culture and history. He has a new book out now called The Hidden Half of Nature. And it's really, it's consistent with the theme of the book you're going to sample, because it's about the microbial roots of nature. And it's fairly recent science in the sense that we're just starting to pay a lot more attention to it. And the tree book actually overlaps with this one a little bit. So those are some new books I had for food news. And I had a small food story to tell you about breadcrumbs. Can I do that now? So, you know, I was thinking about, well, the last few years I've kind of rooted out a lot of industrial food from my pantry. And so I've been thinking about our conversations about food culture and how we associate food, partly with our upbringing, and we have these comfort foods. And I was kind of looking and realizing why I kept breadcrumbs in my cupboard, you know, because I like to bread things sometimes, that's fine. But they've been in there for a long time, and it never dawned on me to kind of question my breadcrumbs. So I kind of thought, well, I don't like to have food that stays around. That's one of Pollan's eating algorithms, right, is don't buy food that can't rot, you know. And so, I mean, this is how naive, I guess, you can be. Even though I've been studying food pretty intensively for about 4 years, I just never looked at the breadcrumb box. It never dawned on me that my connection to breadcrumbs might be irrational. It might be because I associate them, you know, I hope I get a real sympathetic awe here, I associate them with my mom cooking for me. Aw. And like, you know, here I am, I'm almost 60 years old, and I'm working on my diet really intensively, and these breadcrumbs have stayed in the pantry. They've escaped scrutiny until just 2 days ago, when I decided I needed to look at them. And you know where this is going to go. They're not breadcrumbs at all. They're, this is kind of Pollan's point about eating algorithms. I didn't take a great picture of this, but this was right before I threw them out. I mean, they're added sugar, high fructose. Second ingredient is high fructose corn syrup. You know, they're exactly what, they're not breadcrumbs. They're imposters. And they have, let's see if we can get the other one. So, how do you get trans fat in? I mean, how do you get saturated fat into bread? How do you get added sugar into bread, right? Breadcrumbs. And how do you stabilize them so that they can sit in your cupboard for years? And they'll taste about as good. And the added fat means that when you add them to fish or meat and you fry them or bake them, then the fat that they've added, you know, mixes with the fat that you've added, and it tastes great. So I think it's a good example. I wanted to start today with you just getting into groups for 2 minutes or 3 minutes. I'd just like you to talk about what are the industrial foods that get to stay in your pantry the most? Like, what are your top favorite industrial foods? And what would it be like to make a substitute? What's the substitute for industrial breadcrumbs? Anybody? That's the other thing, is that you realize it's so easy to take this out of your food system. What do? When you need breadcrumbs. Yeah. How? Just toast a couple slices of bread and grind them up. I mean, you know, that's the irrationality of it. It's like, until I realized that I was hanging on to this food as a kind of comfort food from my childhood, if you can imagine. Oh my God, if I had a therapist, I'd go talk to him or her about it. Seriously, we have these connections with food that are really profound, and sometimes we don't, until we start criticizing and thinking about them, we don't know where they're coming from. So could you just, 2 or 3 minutes, I just want to hear about your top few industrial foods, the things you would be, it would be hardest for you to give up, and what would a food be like that you could compare that food? So we've already said, if it's industrial bread, compare it to an artisan bread loaf, you know, so there's some obvious substitute. If it's bread, industrial bread crumbs, try grinding up a couple slices of bread. You just do that for 2 minutes, just check in with each other. We've got a couple of other discussion groups. Top industrial foods and what you would do to challenge them. Go ahead and get the Mad Dog 20 or 20. Yeah. No, you can look into what. Yeah. Actually, I would like somebody to research alcohol as a quasi food item, because I think there's a. I don't know this for sure, but I have a hypothesis that there's a big difference in the sugar content of liquors versus beer. But you're still getting a lot of, you know, you're still getting a lot of alcohol. You're getting calories from alcohol. There is a real, okay, I'm going to mention it.
There's still process, like some vodkas are made from wheat, some are made from potatoes.
Yeah. I would be interested in hearing people talk about their, a friend of mine said he had 5 scotches and it was like eating 5 bags of Skittles. I mean, you know, he's made some inquiries about this. There is a really weird thing about alcohol and food I'll share with you, and again, it's a subject for further research. If you Google, why are drunks so skinny? You get a theory that if you drink alcohol a certain way, it actually doesn't metabolize into your body. You actually aspirate it. I don't know how authoritative that is. Check it out. Anyway. Yeah, it's not good for you. Excessive amounts are not good for you. Yeah. Has anybody got a food item that in the last couple of years they had in their diet and they got rid of by swapping it out with something that was better? Right.
And they keep in the fridge.
Right.
It's like really easy, but it goes from like sugars being like
good.
Half of it to none of it.
Good. Do those comparisons. You just have to look at the products. I mean, there is useful information on those products, and you know from that commercial peanut butters take out the oil, the natural oil, and put in their own stabilized oils, and then they add sugar. So yeah, that's the kind of swap I'm talking about. You guys have probably done this in your family life. I'm sure you have parents who have been critical about food practices and occasionally made these swaps. I just think it's kind of a neat thing for us to be able to consider while we're studying food this way. Okay, let's take about 10 minutes and talk a little, catch up on this food, how we represent diets. I just want to, one of the things I suggested for your optional diet review was to, by the way, I'm gonna save 10 or 15 minutes on Thursday, at the end of Thursday's class, to meet just with the folks who are doing the diet review optional exercise. That way we can kind of see where you are with it. The deadline for that is, I think, soon, end of February. So that for the first step, I think. So anyway, I wanted to kind of see. I'll check in with you guys at the end of Thursday's class on that. But one of the things I did recommend in that project was for you to use the dietary guidelines, U.S. dietary guidelines, in if you don't have to do this, but this is one option for your reflection for that first step. So I'm going to pass around. The current guidelines, 2015 to 2020, are 140 pages long. So we've gone from a food pyramid to a booklet. But you know the current U.S. food pyramid is actually not a pyramid anymore. It's choose my plate. And so let's talk a little bit about food pyramids and ways of representing food. I'll also pass around this. This is linked to the wiki, but this compares different countries' ways of doing food pyramids. So you can kind of see. I especially encourage you to check out the Greek one. I think it's kind of interesting. So check that. Flip through that while we're talking about this. So here's the question for your notes. Can we just take a few notes on this and talk about this together? How do you graphically represent a healthy diet? That's the problem of the food pyramid. How do you graphically represent a healthy diet? And, one way you could do it is to be very quantitative. You could give people the ranges. Let's see if I remember them. I think it's something like 40 to 65% calories from carbs. Oh, gosh, I'm not going to do this quite right. 15 to 30% fats. I should have written this down. And then I think it's 10 to 20% protein, something like that. So one thing you could do is you could give people the macronutrient breakdown in ranges. And I spent a lot of time puzzling about this because I was thinking, well, how do we know about these ranges? Why do we think these are the good ranges for a healthy diet? And my best theory, and I haven't confirmed this at all yet, but my best theory is that in order to get within these ranges, you have to choose a variety of foods, right? And so one reason we represent healthy diets with pyramids is to get people to choose a variety of foods. So the point for your notes would be you could actually just teach people about carbs, fats, and proteins and how to keep an eye on the ranges, because to stay within these ranges, you have to kind of choose a variety of foods. Now, that wouldn't guarantee healthy eating by any means, but when you look at what a food pyramid is doing, it's... let me pull up a bunch of food pyramids here. It's trying to give you an idea of proportionality. Food pyramids. Lots of food pyramids. It's trying to give you an idea of proportionality, but with representing real food. So arguably a graphic food pyramid is going to be better because it's showing you pictures or images of real foods. Now, do any of you remember encountering the food pyramid as a kid? Do any of you have any thoughts about what you thought when you were taught the food pyramid? Did it puzzle you in any ways? Can we just kind of try to troubleshoot the food pyramid naively together? What's weird about the food pyramid? My son used to say, it made it look like the goal was to get to sugar. Right? It's like sugar's on top. It's like, that's what we're all trying to get to. Anything else weird about it?
There's a lot of foods these days that don't clearly fit into one of those sections.
Yeah, like what? Both natural foods and industrial foods. Yeah, what are you thinking about?
I have no idea, but I just know that like the sugars portion, the fats and oils and stuff up top, like.
No, you're on the right side.
Most of my food, I just don't know.
So sugar occurs in the fruit group, right?
But fats, oils, and sweets.
The point of putting that at the top of the pyramid was supposed to be, to say use little of it, right? But we also have a category where we say. For instance, we say less than 10% of your diet should come from alcohol, of your calories should come from alcohol. Less than 10% should come from added sugar. So here's the point for your notes. Why does sugar get in the food pyramid instead of being on the list of things to limit? You see what I mean? The answer is, the food pyramid is supposed to show that you just have a little bit of that. But it also puts it in a very prominent place. What's the point of having it on top? Right? More contradictions. Why is it that meat, poultry, fish, dry beans? Why are they called dry beans? Why are eggs with meat instead of yogurt instead of with dairy? So there's just a lot of weird things. Some groups are food groups, and some groups mix food and nutrient groups. There's fats and oils and meat. Why are fats and oils a separate category? So that's fine. You can trip up the food category this way. And there really are incoherences to it. But, yeah.
Well, like, the most exposure I got to this was, like, in elementary school.
Good, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was always in the cafeteria. So right. You're, like, waiting in line to go to pizza.
Good.
Like,
it's really good, yeah.
It's yeah. High level. You can use sparingly.
Great.
Okay,
right.
So don't get a lot of it. But then they
yeah.
Hand you this, like, fat piece of pizza
right.
With, like, enough oil to probably,
good.
Like,
good, right. So where's pizza? So you're looking at the food pyramid, and you're looking at the pizza. So again, mismatch. Is that sort of where, maybe that was kind of where your comment was going, too, about foods that kind of don't match the pyramid. Also, what's a serving? What's a serving? I never understood that when I was a kid or when I was a parent. You know, my kids would ask me, how many servings have we had? Well, then you read down, and you find out sometimes a serving is like 2 ounces, when normally you'd have 4 or 6. So that means you had a lot of servings.
I just have a question.
Sure.
Like, where would we put like potato chips and mac and cheese
right.
And
right.
Industrial foods? Like, where would we put them into the pyramid? That's what I've always thought.
Absolutely. Good question. Well, it's a starchy vegetable. That's a good thing. It's a fatty starchy vegetable because it's saturated with oils.
Mm-hmm.
So notice if you had put it in here, it would have counted toward your carb and fat. There's no protein in potato chips. In potatoes, right? I don't know why they call it dry beans. That's one of my pet peeves. Nobody eats dry beans. You have to cook them. So what's the point? That'd be like saying raw meat. You know, why would you say that?
Something also, in one of our readings, it showed like food pyramids of other countries. And
yeah.
Something that popped up on a lot of them that we didn't have was water, which I thought was
that's
interesting.
Yeah, right.
We do not
right.
Drink
we don't talk
as
about
much water.
Water
as a lot of
right.
Countries,
that's right.
We don't
right.
Have that.
Related sort of things around your diet, like hydration and things like that. Yeah, good. That's a good one. Okay, so where do you go with it? Now, we have a version of the pyramid which has, which is probably shown here. Let's see. Yeah, this is the new pyramid. So it actually overcomes, whoops, that was the wiki page for the new pyramid. So it overcomes some of those problems because notice sugar doesn't get a pride of place anymore. And notice that they can put lots more pictures of food products, not just, is that a good thing? Maybe, yeah. The pictures of natural food products for the most part, right? I'm not sure. Is that a piece of meat down there? Is there a bean there somewhere? Okay. So the other thing, the next thing to get to would be, let's see, a couple more items on this list. Sugar on the top, dry beans, category mixtures. Oh, yeah, not all of the foods within this. One way the food pyramid really became outdated is that not all of the foods in here are equal. It might depend on the version you get of them. So now we know more about the difference between grass-fed and industrial-fed dairy and meat, and we know that it has a different balance of oils and fats. So that's completely obscured in this diagram, right? It's just showing you the foods, and the point for your notes would be foods come in a variety of qualities that have different nutritional characteristics. So the example was grass-fed beef. You could apply it to whole grain versus refined grains. What we already talked about what's a serving. So my plate is actually kind of an improvement on this in a way, because I don't know why dairy gets its own little circle over there. It does obscure. My only criticism of this one, maybe you guys have some criticisms. That's cute, kind of goes around. It's all foods except protein. Anybody have an idea of why protein wouldn't get broken into real foods? I think there's an ideology behind it, but I'll see if you guys agree. Protein covers up what in our food culture that's sensitive, that we have trouble talking about? It covers up the difference between vegetable-based protein and animal-based protein, right? So having protein on the food plate, in my opinion, that's just my interpretation, is ideological because it's covering up a controversy that we can't really talk about very easily, which is what are the different qualities in sourcing protein between animal proteins and vegetable proteins. It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat meat, it just means that if we were having an intelligent discussion about a snapshot of your food, we might want to say to use Pollen's comment about eating mostly plants, right? But this just kind of says, well, whatever protein you want, that can be a quarter of your plate, and then you're going to get more protein from your dairy. Does that sound plausible as a criticism? I don't know. Anybody, any thoughts? Yeah.
It's kind of like a question on why dairy is in like all the pyramids, but it's not like essential to our well-being.
Right.
But it gets a huge section.
See, sometimes when I get frustrated with food representations, I want to go back to this. Because when you go back to this, you put dairy gets put in protein and fat. And that's what your dairy is going to be. It's going to be protein and fat. I don't want to be reductive. There's all kinds of good stuff. There's linoleic acid and really good dairy. So, but
I was talking to Cox, like my friend back home, she has a farm. And basically she drinks unpasteurized milk. And basically her family told her that it's healthier because they don't basically heat up the liquid and kill the bacteria inside of it, which
good.
Is what they do at their dairy farm.
Yeah.
Because there's like fecal matter gets into the milk and stuff, and they have to.
Yeah, there's a literature on that. It seems authoritative to me, the claims that are made. One reason we tend to pasteurize milk, though, is that there have been, in the early 20th century especially, there were health-related milk, there were problems with milk. And so pasteurization was an achievement to solve those problems. But it is possible to have unpasteurized. And that dairy I've been plugging in a fellow, Pure Air, they do unpasteurized raw milk. And I've had it before. I'm not sure I'm on board with it, but I'm trying. Yeah, good. Any other thoughts about food pyramids, ways of representing food? So just for, in your notes, I want to make a big comparison. Pollen's last chapter, the third section of the book, that's a way to represent food. So in your notes, I would say you've got nutrient ranges, you've got graphics, and you've also got what Pollen calls eating algorithms. And I just want to see if you have any thoughts about some of his eating algorithms. Because what he's saying is if you just have about, he makes a lot of them, but he has some primary ones. What are his primary ones, right? Eat food, mostly plants, not too much. So those are like his primary algorithm. And then let's drill down and get some of the other ones just from our reading for today, if we could. I'm just curious about any reactions you might have to them. And then just wait, because we still have a few minutes before Jenny shows me. The algorithms in this last chapter really are more about lifestyle, how to eat. And I want to add some things to that. So let me just read a couple of these for your notes, just so you can recall them and have them there. Pay more, eat less, remember that one? Just list these, because I'm going to add a couple to them. Eat meals, you know, whole meals. You don't have to write this one down. Don't get your fuel from the same place your car does. That's a cute one. So just eat slowly. That's a major one, I think. Cook. Zepeda has some thoughts about the end of cooking. And then I wanted to add a couple. I think I had them on my note here. I'd add some things to Pollen's. I think you should make ingredient trade-ups. That's what I was talking about with this, the idea of swapping out foods or trading up quality of foods. In this last chapter, he gets into things that food writers call mindful eating concepts. So I want to just add a couple of mindfulness eating concepts here. I take these very seriously. It's up to you how much you want to experiment with them, but you could do this as part of your optional assignment. I think there's, you should get into a kind of mental state when you're preparing food. Preparing to make food is, you should clean yourself, you should wash, you should get yourself settled, you should try to stop thinking, these are just suggestions, you should try to stop thinking about your day and focus on the fact that you're getting ready to put something in your body. You should attend to the making of the food itself. You shouldn't be distracted while you're cooking the food. You should be looking at it and kind of examining it and savoring it. And when he says eat slowly, he means savor it. Attend to the eating space. Buy a candle if you don't already have a candle. Light a candle occasionally when you have dinner. Make the space special. Use a placemat. How many of you do some of these things as part of your food rituals? Well, most of you do some of them, right? So the point would be to ask yourself how much my eating satisfaction could be increased by things I could do to make the food environment a more mindful place. My favorite slogan these days is eat like your life depends on it. I think that would be a good on a t-shirt. Okay, so what I'd like you to do, if you just, I think we have a few minutes for this, and then probably Jenny will come while we're doing it. If you could just get into small groups, I'd like you to thumb through the food algorithms from the Whole Foods section. And I'd like you to identify some that you, I'd like to put them into three groups, basically. Some which you find, which you've tried, some which you find plausible, some which you find less important, and some which you find questionable. Like, I want us to be critical about all these. So just get into your groups, thumb through them, and share with each other how you would put them into different categories like this for maybe 5 or 7 minutes.
Nice, just one. Okay, hey. Yeah, what's up? So, born and raised here in Spokane, love it, decided to stay, went away to Colorado for a little bit after graduation, and really got to see a small town of 1,000 people, a town called Crested Butte. Has anyone been to Crested Butte? Yeah, favorite ski town here in the country. One of my favorite. Got to get to know a little bit more about the small ecosystem that they had going on. Everyone was eating local. Everyone knew their farmer. Everyone was getting their eggs from their farmer's market. I went there during the summer and came back during the winter. Of course, that's a little bit different story. They hike up the prices on all the organic stuff that's being shipped in because they're a little mountain town in the middle of nowhere. But it was really fun for me, especially during the summertime, to see this living and moving ecosystem of local products. And so while I was away, my grandma actually got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And this was kind of where Pantry Fuel got its idea. I came back to Washington here in Spokane and I started taking care of her, and within 5 months she had passed away of knowing her diagnosis. And if you've ever had to take care of a loved one, you know how hard it is to not only make sure that they're getting the proper care that they need medically, but also what's for dinner at the end of the night, and what kind of foods are best with their diets and their medications that they're taking. And I have a lot of friends who are nurses and a lot of friends who are doctors, and the only schooling that they're getting on real food and diets right now is what works with different medications and some different complications that they might have eating certain foods with medications. And so the nurses and the doctors weren't great resources for me. And so I did a lot of research on my own. I actually went back and got certified as a nutrition consultant, and grandma passed away, and this idea started brewing. And I started looking into different opportunities of how I could start bringing back what I had learned in Colorado about that local food movement to Spokane a little bit more, because I realized it was the time before Kendall Yards, if anyone's been to that farmer's market here, had started, and that's a really great resource for everyone. But it was before that started. We only had a couple farmers markets, and they were small, and so I thought, well, I can better connect if I go straight to the farms. So I started building all these relationships with farmers, and it was really fun. I know from studying nutrition and studying food that local food is the healthiest food, and for me, I'm a runner, I'm a coach, cross-country coach here in town, triathlete, I've coached a lot of Ironman athletes. For me, getting the proper nutrition was the number one thing I wanted to provide. I didn't so much care about how fancy the meal was. I knew I could hire chefs and they would figure that out for me. So for me, it was getting the right nutrition, and that started with local. And so I've built all these great connections with farmers in Spokane, up on Green Bluff, out in the Palouse, we get all our lentils from. And so each week we prep meals, fully cooked meals, and we deliver them to homes and different offices here in Spokane. And it's made with locally sourced food. Of course, when it's winter outside, our local products go down because we are in the Pacific Northwest and deal with seasons. But we're still getting our lentils and all our potatoes, and squash lasts a really long time if they store it correctly.
I shared the container food link with them.
Oh,
they
great.
Gave me, yeah.
Yep. And all of our actual containers are sustainable as well. So we reuse and recycle all of our containers, our meal prep containers, and about 75% of our containers come back to us, and we get to reuse them right now, which is really wonderful because we implemented this about 3 months ago, and it's worked out really well for us. Because we're smaller, locally focused, we're able to build that relationship with each of our customers and really let them know, like, hey, if you can't work with us to be sustainable, and as a business owner, this is really important for me to really voice my own opinion and have my company really represent that, my voice be represented within the company. If they don't want to help us be sustainable, maybe we're not the right business for you, and maybe you could go with someone like Blue Apron or Freshly, a company who has a lot of waste, and they're not sourcing locally. They're sourcing from different regions, but they're not sourcing from your specific Spokane local region. And so for me, that was important. And it's been a great win, as we talk about business and competition all the time. It's been a great competitive drive for us to be able to use local products, because people do care about that, and it's a driving force. And even though costs are a little bit higher for local food, because they have smaller crops, they're not doing huge monocrops each year like you find food at grocery stores, for instance. A lot of times a grocery store will sign on with a farmer for a year, and they will say, we will need, you know, 20,000 pounds of carrots or whatever it might be. Are you committed to growing that much? And they'll say yes, and then, of course, they deal with the weather and Mother Nature, and if that gets in the way, then they all lose. But they commit to them for 2, 5, 10 years to growing these crops, and so these crops get over-tilled, and they become monocrops. And so with monocrops, if you study soil at all, which I'm very, very interested in studying.
I'm just about to start that. Yeah.
Great, okay, yeah. Wonderful. Starting, so you'll dive into that a little bit. Kind of a segue into that for you. Soil, the more it gets tilled, of course, the lower nutrients there are in it, less nitrogen, less potassium, whatever that food, all those nutrients that food's using and picking up from that soil then gets to your table, and are those essential nutrients for you to live and thrive. Those get diminished the more you plant, the more you till that soil and use the same crop each year. And so it's really important for the local small sustainable farms that we work with in here in town to make sure that they're growing something different in their soil. They move around their crops, of course, unless it's an annual crop that can come back each year. But it's really important that they're growing something else and really treating that soil with care versus that over-tilling and the monocropping. So that's kind of pantry fuel in a nutshell.
That's great, because one of the things I've really learned a lot from Jenny about is local sourcing issues. So later in the course we'll read literature on how nutrition and flavor degrade the longer food is kept in storage or in transportation. So part of the argument for local food is that you will get more flavorful and more nutritious food. And so that's a really neat value that your business is committed to. Do you want to tell them a little bit about Link, or show them a little bit about how a customer experiences your business?
Absolutely, yeah. And so the reason I'm here talking to you today, too, is I'm going to offer a cooking class at the beginning of the semester and towards the end of the semester that'll kind of fit in with what you're all learning. So I don't know if you've
thought
much about
that.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is our website. We source from a company quite a bit called Link Foods, and they are basically the middleman between food companies here in Spokane, restaurants, caterers, delivery companies like mine, and they've created an online marketplace, and let's see if I can pull up their website right now, just because it's kind of fun to see. They've created an online marketplace, essentially, that we can go as buyers, and we can pick and choose what we'd like to order. And so, if I can remember my login, that's the trickiest and hardest part of the day.
You guys see how this is kind of a new food economy, right? This is a way to get local production to have its own distribution system. So Link, is that fair to say? Link is a kind of distributor.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they're just a distributor. And they work with about 100 different small farms in the area here in Spokane. And prior to that, the restaurants in Spokane were either having to directly work with, I'm not going to remember my password.
That's okay.
We're going to have to directly.
Not there.
Yeah. I know you guys are all going to know my
possible. We'll order a bunch of food, it'll show up in the
That's nice. Yeah, so too bad. But before that, they were using like Food Services of America. And so, Food Services America, they're sourcing their product from anywhere in the country, wherever it's convenient. So a grocery store, you know, they're going to get their oranges, of course, from California, Mexico area. And again, the longer transit time, the lower the nutrients are in the food. And so each time that food also gets handled, a bruise, something on, an orange gets bruised or busted, or an apple, that sends out a bunch of phytochemicals to try and fight against that bruise a lot of times, and nutrients get released right away, which initially you would be eating. But now that it's been bruised or bumped, there's a lot of issues with nutrient decreasing in that way as well. So besides transit, there's product handling. And then you can talk about timing as well. So in Spokane, we have a really great farmer's market, of course, Kendall Yards. We have a downtown one, we have a Liberty Lake one, and you'll see most of the same farmers at these farmers markets. We'd like to get a lot more smaller farms coming up. I went to a women's and agriculture conference last summer over in the middle of Oregon, and it was a bunch of women farmers that are coming up, and actually there's more female farmers coming up currently right now in the U.S. than there are men farmers, and it's just because it's been, yeah, very interesting. It's we've just opened up a lot of female progression in this industry, and they seem to love the farming. So we're trying to get smaller farms to these farmers markets because right now we still have kind of middle-sized farms who can sometimes sell at, say, like Rocket Market, one of our smaller local little shops here in town. When you have someone who just has maybe a 10 by 10 foot garden, but they're growing, 500 heads of lettuce each season, they could be selling those and really help increase some profit for them. But also, it's a small, sustainable area. I'm sure those lettuce heads are going to be way more nutrient dense than something you're getting at a grocery store. So there's a lot of issues with trying to get smaller farmers to be able to come to market, and that's something that I know the agriculture industry has kind of struggled with for a while. So when companies like Pantry Fuel pop up, these farmers see it as an opportunity to be able to connect with consumers better, because farmers aren't in sales, they're not in business, and so they lack that consumer face-to-face experience that a lot of small businesses don't. And so for me, it's been really rewarding to connect with these farmers who thought that maybe they weren't able to, wouldn't be able to ever get to market. And that's been really fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of one of the things that I find exciting about what you're doing, is that you're kind of connecting a few dots and delivering that has a really high value.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So if you go on like our upcoming menu, and it's not updated till Wednesdays, but
when everybody's gonna get really hungry.
That's like, yeah, that's like what our food comes in. You choose your meal plan. We have our menu listed each week. We usually go 2 weeks out. This week we're about a week out. But essentially, you have a menu, and you pick out, if you want to order a week or subscribe, you can just order weekly, and you get to pick which meal plan you want. So I have a high protein, a health and wellness, and vegetarian. The high protein is about 30 grams of protein. So if anyone knows their macros at all, something interesting that a lot of people don't know is that any sitting time they're eating a meal, your body can only absorb about 30 grams of protein at a time. Any more than that, you're secreting out of your urine. So it's very expensive urine. So I always like to laugh at athletes I used to work with. They try and eat more protein. They're like, my roommate, he's like a bodybuilder, and he's like, 45 grams of protein every meal. And I'm like, dude, you're hurting yourself, your kidneys. And so long-term use of too much protein is really hard on your body. And we don't educate people enough about that nutrition.
I was just going to ask how much time in between, like...
An hour and a half to three, yeah. It depends on your body. Everyone metabolizes food differently, but really, if you learn it from a standard, nutrition standard standpoint, it's about 3 hours from digestion. So that's really important for me as a runner, or those I coach who are runners, because I say don't eat within 3 hours before your race starts, because that food's just adding extra weight in your stomach. So that's been really fun for me, because relating all of this nutrition stuff to running, there's a lot that goes hand in hand, from wanting to get my customers local food and healthier food, but also athletes, and being able to re-educate. That's why I do cooking classes and nutrition classes. My largest one was down at Washington Trust Bank here, and I spoke to about 500 employees. And it was amazing to me, and it still amazes me, how much we don't know, and even with the information that's available to us, how much we don't know about nutrition and basic nutrition. Because to me, knowing that 30 grams of protein per meal is basic nutrition, but to someone else who hasn't studied nutrition, that's not basic nutrition knowledge. That's something that you would have to go search for and look up. And I always like to talk to groups about these basically confirmation biases. So we look up and we research in a way that confirms what we already believe in or what we already don't believe in. And so we confirm those biases in a way that we research or type it out in Google or whatever it might be. And so I always like to ask people if they say, hey, I'm gluten-free. And I say, well, tell me why you're gluten-free. I'm not attacking you. I'm just simply asking an open-ended question. Why are you gluten-free? And a lot of people will say, well, it doesn't make me feel good. My stomach hurts. I bloat. I break out or whatever it might be. And I say, well, then that leads me to the next question, just thinking logically, what are you eating that makes you feel that way? And a lot of times people will say, well, you know, bread, and I go out and I eat a lot of bread at the restaurant or the Oreos or the, you know, and I'm thinking, well, that's sugar. That's usually processed white grain sugar. And so I always, when I work with someone on an elimination diet, and are you guys are kind of starting to talk about elimination diet?
Some people are going to choose that. That would be the second step in that optional assignment. Right?
Okay, yeah. So I always talk about an elimination diet, like let's first just take out sugar, all processed white sugar, and then tell me how you feel. And if you feel fine, that's wonderful. We found the culprit right there. But if you don't, you still feel terrible, and you're eating a whole grain, say like a Dave's Killer Bread, something that's a whole grain, whole wheat, has the bran on it still. That's what defines a whole grain product. Then we know once we, you know, take that out, maybe it's that is the culprit, and maybe you need to see if you're celiac as well. But starting with steps, really, really small incremental steps versus saying I'm gluten intolerant and then just realizing, well, maybe it's just the processed sugar that's bothering me.
You might want a bread that doesn't have added gluten.
Exactly. So, but with our high protein too, it's really nice. You can add an extra ounce of protein if you want to hit you right at that 30 grams of protein. So I have a lot of guys that like to get right there at that 30 grams of protein. And
a number of your customers are athletes, right?
A number of them are. Yeah, we're actually starting to serve. I meet with the manager of Sacred Heart Nutrition on Thursday this week. And so we're starting to work with a lot of medical patients because they're realizing, and the hospitals are realizing, which I am like so thankful for, they're starting to realize we're letting these patients go, these outpatients, and they don't have resources outside of here. And we can give them a list of foods they can or cannot eat if they're on a renal diet, which means they can't eat some, they have some kidney issues. But do they know how to fix those meals? Do they know how to cook those meals? Do they know, you know, if I tell them they can't have this, or this, to them, that's eliminating maybe half of what they were eating normally in their diet, and so that they get overwhelmed, they don't know how to cook, and then they start relying just on processed foods.
Mm-hmm. I should say we go to 3:05.
Perfect.
So let's also give them some detail about the cooking class.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. So I'll just pull this up, but I have a ton of fun cooking. Let me just pull up on my phone because he's going to email you. I guess maybe would be the best way.
Yeah.
He can email you the information, but basically, we'll do a cooking class.
Okay.
I limit.
Let's give him the date. Do we have date?
Yep, I limit to 12 people, but any time, I want to know what works best for you. So whoever, I had a sign-up sheet that I was going to print off, but whatever works best for the most people, that's what date I'll pick.
Oh,
basically,
okay.
March 20th through the 25th. Either from 6 to 8 p.m., or we can do 4 to 6 p.m.
Okay.
And then that would be the first one, kind of talking about diet analysis, and we'll make a nutrient-dense meal, and I'll show you how can you make one meal and get all the nutrients that your body needs.
Good. What's the other day?
The other would be the Art of Elimination, Cooking for All Diets, and April 10th through the 15th, same times, 4 to 6 or 6 to 8. And again, whatever works best for the majority of the people. Classes are $25. If that seems steep for you guys, I'm happy to work with your group. That's pretty standard. That'll cover the costs of you guys cooking in our facility. It'll cover the cost of you taking a meal home, a couple servings of that meal home. And then I can accommodate, if you've already identified as gluten-free or vegetarian or vegan, we can accommodate all that too.
So maybe I'll do a little Google form poll, and,
perfect.
And then of the people who are interested, they can tell us which times and dates work.
Mm-hmm.
And so that maybe give them a little. So that was for the first one.
Yeah, that was the
and
first
then what,
one.
What was the idea for the second
the
one?
The second one. So the first one's that diet analysis. So really looking at how can we get you, how can you guys easily cook a meal. I'm not fancy cooking. I always say I'm like your grandma teaching you how to cook for the first time. Like it's pretty basic. I'll teach you some cooking skills. We'll talk about why we're using the food that we're using in that recipe, though, so that you know why do we need vitamin C? Why do we need vitamin D? Why is a sweet potato better than a white potato? The second class is going to be the art of elimination. So we're going to make and prep together a ton of different foods, and you're going to be able to build that meal how you want it based on what you've decided to eliminate or what you've already eliminated. First 20 minutes are kind of lecture based, just like this. I know I'm super boring, but
no.
I try and make it super fun. Your music and all that, it's actually really nice. And we just talk about the meal and the recipes and just answer any questions that you have. So I would love to get at least 24 people involved. If we get more than that involved between a couple classes, we can run it another date as well. If those don't work for you, that would be totally fine.
Maybe you guys have some questions about either Pantry Fuel as a business or the cooking class you'd like to ask. Still a few minutes.
Oh. Got 4 minutes, yeah.
I kind of had a question on if you had any theories for why like the gluten-free thing has become so prominent in like our day and age. Has it always been like that, or is it the way that grains are being processed that you think?
Well, we have a better way of testing it. And so that goes with anything. We have a better way of testing almost anything now, testing Alzheimer's, testing whether you're ADHD. And so if you have a better way of testing it, of course people are going to come forward more and doctors are going to diagnose you more. The other absolutely is the way that we're growing crops nowadays. It has to do a lot with the over-tilling, and it has to do a lot with the chemicals and the pesticides and the herbicides that they're using on the crops. There's elimination of a ton of different chemicals in Europe that are not being used commercially compared to what we're able to use in the U.S. And that eventually will roll to our country, but right now I think the biggest reason is the way that we're growing crops now. We're over-tilling, we're overusing pesticides, and there's a lot of issues with climate change too. Some of you would disagree with me, but there is a lot of change with a lot of problems with climate change and how that's changing the way that crops are growing as well, and how we're having to eliminate different pesticides, pests that we haven't had to deal with in the past too, in great numbers. Oh, that's a great question.
Is your detox plan like juice based or is it food?
It's whole food based. Yeah, it's basically an elimination diet. Yeah, so it's a she's talking about one of the recipes. So we also do, I have recipes each week, and so if you don't want to buy meals from us, you get the recipes with a great, we have 5 new recipes up each week, and you get to basically get our recipes. We give you a grocery list, you get to shop and then cook them, and it's really inexpensive. It'll keep your grocery bill down.
Because that goes to the practicality thing as well.
Yeah.
I wish we had time to talk about bone broth.
Absolutely.
Can you just say a little bit about
bone
broth?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll say a little bit about bone broth. So, sorry if you're vegan or vegetarian. I'm sorry if you're offended about this. I don't mean to offend you, but we do bone broth. My grandma thinks it's hilarious that we do that because she used to just always take the bones back in the day, boil them, and you get the collagen out of them. And collagen is one of the most absorbable proteins in our body, and you don't get it from a lot of foods. And so it's actually the best recovery drink out there if you're an athlete breaking down muscle in any way. And so we boil the bones, we get the collagen, we strain the bones. That collagen comes off of it. We simmer them for 24 to 36 hours. Chicken bones a little bit less, and we sell it.
Do chicken and the beef bones all go together?
No, separately. Yeah, separate chicken and bone. Yeah,
is it like
or broth or beef.
Cider vinegar, where you like add water to like dilute it, or do you drink like that whole thing straight?
A lot of people are doing, like, I have, this is, bone broth lattes are my favorite. They're
I'm gonna have one
super
someday.
Yummy. It's literally half bone broth, half milk, and it tastes like if you've had, what's like that turmeric milk that, like, help me out, like, you guys know, like the golden milk. You guys had the golden milk or heard of it before? It basically tastes like golden milk, where it's like cinnamon and turmeric and broth, and it's super yummy. But a lot of people just sip it or cook with it in their soups or stir fry.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
I have a couple of cards if anyone wants one too, so feel free.
You bet. Yeah.
Hey, Jenny, I got a question. What's your opinion on Monsanto?
Also, the thing is, the tractors basically it's hard for the tractors if they don't, so that the kind of if they don't use Monsanto products, it's harder on the tractors.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're using also because it keeps the most people do not know that.
My whole family grows Monsanto seeds, unfortunately, because they
don't
have a choice.
You don't know.
At this point, especially
yeah,
the
so it's
sort
not
of
really
age.
Hard.
Yeah, I know.
But I asked my cousin George, who it's kind of funny, he's a big old hick guy,
but
he literally laughed in the face when I was like, why don't you just try and use less pesticides?
So,
the
trouble is they don't have enough choice.
Yeah, and equipment, $1 million
yeah.
Combines,
yeah.
Are not
yeah,
going to
because,
adjust.
Yeah, compromise will take 5 years off the equipment. I know, it's terrible.
Well, that's awesome you were in press with you. My dad lived in Dyson, so
oh,
it's really nice. Do you go Red Rocks
month? I did a little bit. I saw, what did I see there?
Is this Human Fit?
I saw Pretty Lights there. They were
so
cool. I've seen a couple others there. I can't remember. Yeah, just had a drunk night. So.
Well, hey, great.
What's your name?
You'll probably see me.
Yeah,
I need some tips.
Me. Yeah, absolutely. Contact me also if you have any information or you want
to
talk. I'd
love
talking.
To. Me too. Awesome, Jay.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're
going to get that bone growth, right?
Probably for like another month.
Thank you. Okay, good.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Enjoy the conference.
Okay.
I don't take it
doesn't matter.
Essentially, right now I'm not eating anything. You slowly take everything out, tells you what to take out, and then add it back.
Nice.
Okay.
That's a really nice.
Okay.
That's a really
nice. Cool.
Thank you.
Question.
So, how about your jars for like some
you can get a 16 ounce
uh-huh.
or a 32
okay, perfect.
Yeah.
And I would assume like 8 ounces to 16 ounces is pretty much like one serving.
A serving's like 4 to 8 ounces, actually.
Oh, good. So
yeah.
It's less. Perfect. So, I can take it over.
Yeah, like,
I just
usually get a 32 ounce jar for a week.
Okay, perfect. That's what I was going to ask, like how much per week.
Yeah.
So, perfect. I've been thinking about, because I was looking at a different kind of, I was looking at Grace, but it was really expensive, and it didn't have everything that I wanted, because Grace is like snack foods that get delivered, yep, and it's like a monthly thing, but it's pretty expensive, and then this is a lot less expensive than local produce.
Yep, and local Washington.
Yeah, exactly, yep, exactly.
And the bone broth is always fresh,
okay.
And so the thing, like if you see bone broth on the shelf at the grocery store,
uh-huh.
It's
probably
if you've ever had it, it's been sitting there for, well, only lasts 3 to 4 days fresh.
Okay.
4 days. I always keep my 5 days. It's totally fine. But they say 4 days is the freshest. But they put a lot of citric acid in it, so to preserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes. I've tried every kind on the grocery shelf.
It's like
it tastes bitter. Super
bitter. Okay. Good.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm glad because I'm definitely wanting to try that. What's
awesome.
Your What's the closest like pickup location
to here?
To here.
I would deliver to Gonzaga. That would
yeah.
be. Yeah.
Oh,
we deliver
cool.
here.
Oh,
okay. I just wasn't sure because I have a car, so I can like come and get it, so you guys don't
you
have to worry
can
about
it. Yeah. Or the Fleepy, just down here, Fleepy, on Washington, like
yeah.
the running store. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay,
so
perfect.
We deliver there.
Yeah, I pass there all the time. So.
Okay,
awesome.
Sweet. Awesome.
Great. Well, thank you.
Take care. What was your name?
Becca.
Jenny. Yeah.
Nice to meet
awesome.
You.
Nice to meet
awesome.
You. You can snag one of my cards
great.
If you want. To
thank you very much. Well, nice to meet you.
Yeah, of course. Take care.
Just find
Aaron. Yeah, right here. Yeah, that's drop in, and then if there's a better time, works for you, then come on in.
That should be fine.
Okay, yeah, good.
At least I'll be on the
Olympics. That sounds great. Okay, good. All right.
Love this picture.
Oh, that's,
that
yeah, that's from, yeah, that's actually from Naples last
so
2 years ago. People like to make these really intense foods.
And what's it to be?
Yeah.
Gosh, and here in the U.S., so I
no, right.
Yeah, I'll be quick. It's still, I mean, we don't start until 3:45.